WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
Yes, it is 1 p.m. It is already Friday, folks. TGIF. And you know what? If you're around the mid-Michigan area and if you're, you know, going to work or, you know, getting off work, whatever the case may be, you know, give yourself some extra time because you know what? President Obama is in town, folks. Yes, the president has landed here in East Lansing, and it is complete chaos. I think Alex just got here about literally 15 minutes ago. He was held up getting here. I mean, I'm looking on my Twitter account right now, and there are many people tweeting about, you know, those that are in cars, just a complete standstill on 127. I mean, it's crazy, man. But yes, Obama is in town, folks. That is exciting stuff, none the least. If you go on Twitter, you can see Izzo is there to meet and greet Obama, and he's rocking one fly brown leather jacket. Oh man, I wish I had one of those. Time you're looking fresh, brother. But yeah, Obama's in town. Be safe if you're going out there, and again, allow yourself some extra time out there, because definitely 127 looks like it's jam-packed through the roof. So but yes, welcome to the show. As always, I'm your host Al Martin, and we have a ton to get to today, including MSU and Penn State. MSU didn't even make it close yesterday as Adrian Payne returned. We will also talk about should marijuana be allowed in the NFL? That is the hot button topic that has been talked about for a few weeks now. And Roger Goodell, Commissioner Roger Goodell, has alluded to that thought. And I want to get your thoughts on that. Call in and express your views and opinion on whether or not the NFL should even test for it and allow NFL players to, you know, partake in marijuana use to relieve the pain. 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. We'll be diving into that. And also, if you missed Current Sports TV last night, I sat down with the president of the Lansing Curling Club, Mark McElwee. It was a great time with him, and I hit the ice and learned all about the sport of curling. Of course, the Olympics has kicked off. And Matt, before we kicked off the show, guys, if you have not seen the Sochi, I believe is the official Twitter of the Olympics, the media hotel. If you haven't seen the pictures that certain media members have tweeted out, I mean, it is bad, folks. I mean, bad. I mean, rooms that are missing coat racks and, you know, toilets that you can't even flush. Interesting stuff, folks. I think the hashtag that's going around is Pound Sochi Problem. So, yeah, that's not a good look. But I heard the opening ceremony was great. We'll talk about that and so much more. Again, if you want to call in throughout the entire show, and we'll be taking your calls throughout the entire show, 517-355-9527. Again, 517-355-9527. In the meantime, as always, we got to kick off the show and give you the current sports quick hit headliners on this February 7th. 2014. Again, MSU tops Penn State. Adrian Payne has returned, ladies and gents. Payne scored 12 points in his first game back from a foot injury, and the ninth-ranked Spartans kept pace in the league race with an 82-67 victory over the Nittany Lions. Now, Payne hadn't played since January 7th because of that sprained foot. But although he didn't start Thursday, he played 18 minutes, going 5 of 9 from the field. Now, the Spartans were still nowhere near full strength, as Keith Appling this time, who has been dealing with a wrist problem, he sat out, and of course, Brandon Dawson is still out with a broken hand. Kenny Kaminsky, he was hot. He led the Spartans with 19 points. They now hit the road to play Wisconsin on Sunday. We're going to dive into that game in just a second, analyze it a bit. If you want to call in again, that number is 517-355-9527. All right, 4 Michigan State football players and 3 from Michigan have been invited to the NFL Scouting Combine, which will take place on the 22nd to the 25th in Indianapolis. Now, Michigan State's contingent includes linebacker Max Bulla, who was, of course, suspended for the Spartans' Rose Bowl game against Stanford. He will be joined by former MSU teammates Darquez Denard, safety Isaiah Lewis, receiver Benny Fowler. taller. Denard is projected as a likely first-round draft pick. Now, Michigan will have both starting tackles, Taylor Lewan and Michael Schofield, and receiver Jeremy Gallen at the combine. Now, Jeff Janis, a receiver from Saginaw Valley State, and center Mike Armstrong from GVSU were also invited. And speaking of the Olympics, folks, we have a ton of local athletes from the state of Michigan competing, and of course it kicked off already. Jeremy Abbott, part of the Detroit Skating Club, he's in figure skating. He finished 7th out of 10 skaters in the men's short program of the team event. The U.S. stands in 7th place. Bottom 5 teams are eliminated after dance and short, and ladies short on Saturday. So Saturday is the make-all, break-all for that. Patrick Chine, also of the Detroit Skating Club, he's competing for Canada, a 3-time world champion. He finished 3rd of 10 skaters in the men's short program of the team event. Kaylee Shore from Milford, Michigan, she's competing in the snowboarding event. She posted the 4th highest qualifying score in her slope style heat and 6th best overall to advance to the finals at 4:15 a.m. on Sunday. Of course, that's not our time, that's Russia time. And also Narumi Takashi, he is also in the Detroit Skating Club, competing for Japan, finished 8 of 10 pairs with 46.56 points in the short program of the team event. Japan stands in 4th place. Again, the long program will be 1:05 p.m. on Saturday. So wish all of them good luck. That's not a bad start for all four of those individuals. Okay, MSU and Nebraska, the number 22 Nebraska Cornhuskers are hosting the number 24 Michigan State Spartans on Saturday. Women's basketball. Earlier this season, MSU dominated their home court and won 70-57. The win stopped at a 5-game win streak. Also, last night, the Red Wings were in action, and they get the W over the Panthers with help from big stops by Jimmy Howard. They beat the Panthers 3-1 at Florida. Daniel Alfredson and Gustav Nyquist added 2 big second-period goals for the Wings. They have now gained 7 of a possible 8 points in its last 4 games, going 3-0-1. Pistons and Nets, they will get it on tonight. The 22-5 Brooklyn Nets take on the Pistons. A 7:30 p.m. tip-off. Detroit begins a 5-game homestand coming off back-to-back losses in the state of Florida. Also, I got to give mad props to Damian Lillard, folks. I mean, this guy is not only competing in one event, but I believe just about every event that's going on this next weekend in the All-Star competition. I can't believe what this guy is about to do. But after, when you talk about the dunk contest, after years of the NBA dunk contest being passed over by elite players, All-Star Weekend in New Orleans will see the most star-studded field in recent memory. Now, defending champion Terrence Ross, he will return, taking on the likes of Harrison Barnes, Ben McLemore, John Wall, Damian Lillard, and Paul George. Now, while there's still no LeBron or Kevin Durant, the field marks the first time in 26 years that 3 All-Stars, Wall, Lillard, and George, will be competing in the dunk contest. Why won't LeBron just do the contest? I just don't get it, folks. You know, we have a lot of students that are here working on the show, Current Sports Daily, and one of those students, Sierra, is a huge LeBron James fan. I mean, you look at her laptop, she's got LeBron James on the wallpaper. I'm pretty sure her room has posters of LeBron everywhere. She probably has a LeBron beach towel. I mean, I got to ask Sierra, why in the world LeBron James will not compete in this competition? It just makes no sense. All right, I had to rant there for a minute. All right, some sad news in the world of baseball. Baseball Hall of Famer Ralph Kiner, he passed away from natural causes yesterday at the age of 91. Now, he played 10 seasons for the Pirates, Cubs, and Indians, hitting 369 homers over the course of his career. He led the MLB in home runs 6 times, and after his playing days, joined the broadcast booth for the White Sox and Mets. And also, news concerning Jameis Winston. Heisman winner Jameis Winston isn't setting his sights on the NFL just yet. Now, days after Florida State coach Jimbo Fisher said his star QB would likely stay 2 more years, Winston confirmed that statement, saying, quote, "Obviously, I'm a big baseball person, so that's an accurate statement because I plan on playing the next season anyway." Now, he stated to be the, if you look at this, Jameis Winston, again, there was so much speculation if he would leave early, But, you know, it looks like he will be staying, folks. That's good news for all those Jameis Winston fans. All right, well, those are your current sports quick hit headliners. If you want to call in and share your thoughts on any of those, you can call in. You know the number. I say it all the time, 517-355-9527. Again, 517-355-9527. And share what's on your noggin. You also go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports and even tweet me at Al Martin, WKAR. And, of course, I'm going to be taking your calls throughout this entire show on anything you want to talk about. And last night, MSU just made it look just too easy against Penn State. Adrian Payne returns an 82-67 victory over Penn State. Again, Payne coming back, but it's kind of a catch-22 game because Payne comes back, but then, you know, you learn at the beginning of the game that point guard Keith Appling would be sitting out due to that wrist injury. But it turns out it's a great game if you're going to rest him because they didn't really need him last night, folks. I mean, it was a complete rout. Alex and Matt, they now join me to talk about this. Guys, Payne looked, you know, really close to 100%, if you ask me. I mean, it looked like he wasn't limping at all. You know, he got out, you know, to a great start. His first shot, I believe, was a made jump shot off a curl. I mean, he looked good throughout the entire game. If you look at Denzel Valentine, guys, I think we might be seeing a turn of the tide with Denzel Valentine. I know a few weeks ago we were kind of harping on what does Denzel do. You know, great. And now, you know, if you look at his inconsistency at the beginning of the season, we're starting to see some consistency from him, specifically on the end of rebounding. And I think his jump shot is really coming along, if you ask me, guys. I mean, there have been times where, you know, he didn't have a reliable jump shot in the mid-range game. You know, he hit a few of those last night. He's done it these past few games, and he's been really hustling and getting rebounds. Denzel played great. Tom Izzo said last night it was one of the best games Denzel has ever played. So he definitely stepped up. And, you know, there were multiple guys, and I've been harping on this, multiple guys that definitely stepped up. Other than Gary Harris. Now, Gary Harris, if you look at last night, the absence of Gary Harris's offense, you're sitting there looking like, all right, who else is going to step up? But, guys, it was a balanced offensive attack with five guys in double figures. One of those guys, Kenny Kaminsky, who's just, his shot is as smooth as a baby's bottom. I mean, it is so pretty, guys. I mean, he had it flowing. One of those nights where he just couldn't miss. And he even had a banker, I believe, at the top of the key from three-point land. I mean, when a guy is hitting that, he is just completely feeling it. They perform better at the free throw line, 14 of 18 from the free throw line. And, guys, they just look like they were just having fun. A much-needed game, especially coming off the loss to Georgetown. What'd you guys think?
Yeah, especially people picking up scoring. The Kenny Kaminsky, he was 5-for-6, and he was knocking down a lot of different threes. He's one guy for me that definitely stepped up and was consistent, Al, was consistently scoring. Other than Gary and Kenny, another guy that really stepped up for me was, although it wasn't as prevalent, was how about Gavin Schilling? Had a nice big block when he came in the game, nice board dunking when he went down the floor. I mean, it seems like Gavin Schilling's even starting to find a little bit more of a role now, too.
Yeah, I mean, it was one of those games where Izzo just played everybody because it was that big of a blowout. I mean, when we saw some contributions from just about everybody, it's hard to look at, you know, this box score right now and really just harp on anyone that didn't show up. I mean, it was just one of those nights, which again, they needed, especially coming off that loss.
Yeah, and you look at how much easier it looked. Everything looked easy, and I don't know if that's just because Payne came back or because Penn State just wasn't bringing the intensity defensively. I'm pretty sure Kenny Kaminsky is still open right now.
Like, oh, yeah, without a doubt.
I don't know how you leave a guy open when he starts out 5-for-5 from three-point land, and they did. He was just getting open looks all night. Everybody was getting open looks all night. Even the ones they missed were good looks. I mean, right. They hit 52% from three-point land, and the ones they missed were open shots. It's not like they were forcing anything. When you look at Valentine, the turnovers are still glaring. When he makes mistakes, he makes spectacular mistakes. Mm. But he's limiting them and getting way more consistent offensively. He's attacking defenses now, and it's so nice to see because when you have a Payne back and you have Valentine attacking the defense, that opens up everything for everybody. I mean, you could see it last night. They were just open shot after open shot after open shot. And the unsung hero for me, it's got to be Matt Costello. Ever since Payne went down, it seems like he goes at least three for, you know, he'll shoot 3 for 4 a game. He's not going to dominate offensively. He's not great at anything, but he is such a solid player. Mm-hmm. I think he's extremely important for them going forward because he's going to get better as the year goes on. But it just, he just does things the right way. He's always in the right spot.
Right.
Not spectacular, just extremely solid. I think he's an important player for
the
team.
Yeah, when you look at Costello, I mean, something that really stands out to me is how fundamentally sound he is. I mean, he does those things. I mean, backing out, boxing out and getting rebounds, you know, making sure you close out well and just go right up with two hands and get the outlet pass. I mean, he does those little things well. I mean, he's very good from the free throw line. If you look at last night, I think he was 4 for 5 from the free throw line, 3 for 3 from field goals. I mean, again, he does those things, those little things that really add energy to the team. And he just puts on his hard hat and just goes out there and works hard. I mean, really with Matt Costello, I mean, a lot of those rebounds too, if you look at how he plays, is just him outworking everybody else to get him. You know what I mean? He was definitely great last night. And, you know, guys, just harping on it again. I mean, again, this team was so balanced. I mean, it was one of those nights where everything went right. And, you know, we talked about it going into yesterday's game, the fact that Penn State is an awful rebounding team. They ranked 10th in the Big Ten in rebounding, and we saw that come to fruition last night. So it's not like, you know, it was a great game for Payne to come back, because I mean, Payne, Costello, the guys in the interior, I mean, they really had just a field day down low. And you look at the second chance opportunities, MSU had 20 second chance points compared to just five for Penn State. So they just really commanded the boards. I believe it was an overall 42-30 rebounding advantage. And guys, they were completely unselfish last night. I mean, completely unselfish. I mean, so many guys got involved. Again, you talk about five guys being in double figures. That's guys being unselfish, passing the ball, great ball movement, and saying, hey, we're not playing for the stat sheet. We're playing to get wins and get the best shot on every possession. And we saw that come to fruition, you know, last night. And it's something that, you know, not even last night's game. I mean, this team is, they just know how to play well together. Even when Gary Harris was struggling, you know, there was a moment there he said, okay, it may not be my night, but I'm going to try to find others. And we saw that happen last night. It was a great game for everybody.
Absolutely. I mean, they had 22 assists on 28 made shots.
Yeah.
I mean, they were sharing the ball. Everybody's getting involved. It just seemed like a complete team effort. It was great to see. And, you know, even Travis Trice, you know, he shot 1 of 6. Didn't shoot well, but he took open shots when he had them. They were good shots to take, and he had 7 assists to 0 turnovers. When you're filling in for a starting point guard and you can have a 7-0 assist-to-turnover ratio, you are doing the right thing.
Yeah.
You can shoot as poorly as you want. You don't even have to make a shot. But if you're getting 7 assists to 0 turnovers, you're doing a good job
for the team.
That's
one heck of a ratio right
Absolutely.
There. Gotta love that.
Yeah, no, closing thoughts. There really was not much to say about this game. I think the most important piece I took out of it was what Izzo said after about the state of Michigan. You've got Michigan and Michigan State competing right now for, you know, a Big Ten championship.
Mm-hmm.
Down the road, maybe. But, I mean, just basketball in the state of Michigan, what that says, the talent on both teams. McGarry's out. Appling goes out. It doesn't matter. The two Michigan teams are playing incredibly right now. So.
Yeah, it definitely is exciting if you live in this state and are following both of these incredible teams. I mean, just keep racking up W's, and it's very, very impressive. You know, I just can't wait. I mean, if MSU is playing like this, again, they're nowhere near, guys, 100%. It's scary to see how good this team can be when March comes around.
I'm wondering, is this the best Michigan duo that we've seen ever? In terms of Michigan and Michigan State together?
I think you can make a case for it, but I would just wait. I wouldn't jump the gun there yet, but I would wait and see. But, I mean, you could definitely make the case right now, looking at how both of these teams are playing and the wins that they've gotten. You could definitely make that case. But I would just want to see how the season plays out, especially once we get around the tournament time. But it's very, very entertaining to watch. And, you know, I really hope that, you know, Keith Appling, again, this was the perfect game to sit him out. I mean, he needed some rest. Let's be honest here. I mean, Keith Appling, if anybody, I mean, he's taken so many beatings, I mean, these past few games. And, you know, Tom talked about it, you know, after the game. And he said that, you know, Keith Appling, bar none, is the toughest player. He is the toughest player on this team. And if he feels as though he can go, he's going to go. He didn't feel like that yesterday, so they sat him out, and it was definitely the right move. And, you know, it's funny because we talked about, you know, this possibly being a good game yesterday. And there was a part of me that wanted to jump the gun and say, oh, this is going to be a blowout. But something in me, you know, looking at the past three wins that Penn State had gotten, I thought it was going to be more of a fight from them. And, you know, Izzo said afterwards, too, I mean, that's not the Penn State team that they have been seeing these past three games. And you kind of saw, you know, when Pat Chambers walked in after the game, before Izzo came in, I mean, you just kind of saw on Pat's face that he didn't know what just happened. You know what I mean? And he even said it was one of those nights where MSU just, they were hitting everything.
Yeah,
you know?
Responding to Matt's question, you know, was it just Penn State wasn't ready? The coach said Michigan State just played such a high level of basketball.
And Pat said, quote, it was one of those nights where they were just hitting everything. And he talked about that moment where Kenny Kaminsky bakes in. He banks in a three-pointer at the top of the key. I mean, when shots like that are falling, you just raise up your hands and say, all right, let's just play as hard as we can and see if we can combat this thing. And, you know, in the end, even the guards, we talked about Newell and, you know, guys like that. They tried, but, I mean, oh, good. DJ Newell had 17 points. And Frazier was great. I mean, he had 22. But other than that, I mean, if you look at the rest of the guys who contributed to Penn State, I mean, you look at 2 points here and there, 3, 7, 8 points. You know, behind Frazier and Newell, you had, Ross Travis with 8 points. That's the third leading scorer.
Yeah.
I mean, it wasn't that Penn State we had seen. So.
Right, yeah. And
don't let that fool you.
One thing that I actually was fooled on was I was curious why at the end of the game with about 5 minutes left, and even down to 3 minutes left, a lot of the starters were still in the game. They were up about 20 points. I don't know if Izzo was looking for something. He was analyzing something. I was talking about it with Jack. Him and I couldn't figure it out why some of the starters were in the game.
Mm-hmm.
Harris was still in the game. Trice was still in the game. Payne was in the game. With 4 minutes to go, they're up 20 points.
Yeah, yeah. And I think, you know, very shortly after that, you know, a lot of them got pulled, of course, and he went really deep in his bench. And the guys that he brought in, they almost kind of scared me there. It was almost a 10-point game at 1 point.
I think that answers your question. Why were they still in the game? Because when you know, the bench guys did come in, it seemed like a 20-point lead went to 12 in about a second.
Frazier hit a three. And Newell had a drive here and there. I'm sitting there looking up like, oh, this is a 12-point game right now. I got a little nervous there for a second, but I believe we have a caller. Mike from Saginaw. Mike, how you doing? Welcome to Courage Sports.
Hey, thank you. I just wanted to ask you, before you watch college basketball over the year, what is your the teams that you impressed with and the player that you impressed with? Also, before you answer that question, up here in Saginaw, they talking about closing one of our high schools for basketball, high schools, period. And I just want to know, in your personal experience, you growing up or anything, you hear anybody talk about their school being closed?
Oh, yeah, without a doubt, Mike. Well, thanks a lot for your call, Mike. Appreciate it. Yeah, I mean, I grew up in Detroit, man, and, you know, I told Matt and Alex this story. You know, I grew up when I was playing ball in high school when Manny Corporal Harris was the man. He was the man. I mean, he was the talk of the town in the Metro Detroit area. My cousin knew Manny, and we used to play, you know, with him in rec leagues all the time. And Redford High School is where Manny went to, and everybody around town. Now, Redford Union High School, which is a really, really close high school to that area as well, that was kind of like Redford's rival. But, I mean, every time those two would play, I mean, Manny would go off for, you know, 30 or 40 points, and there was really no rivalry there. Redford Union still exists, but I believe that was the year, Manny's senior year. It was either that year or the year after that. They had tremendous success at, you know, of course, you guys know Redford High School was known for cranking out ballers. Manny was one of those guys. I believe Manny just got picked up by the Lakers, is it? I think he just got signed. He's in the NBA now. He just got signed from the D League. But anyway, they closed down Redford High School. I mean, and a lot of that has to do with politics. I mean, Detroit, I mean, they went through a really hard period where there were so many schools being closed down left and right just because of Detroit and the status that it was in politically. I mean, the money wasn't there. They were crunching budgets already. So, and as you all know, I mean, you know, my city of Detroit, they filed for bankruptcy recently, which is, it's just a sad period. So I definitely feel you where you're coming from on that, Mike. It's a sad thing, but, you know, that's politics for
us. Yeah, something else to add is consolidation. My school is now coming from a 900, 1,000-person school to a 2,000-person combined school. So not only are schools closing, but there's a lot of consolidation as well.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of these smaller schools that have 500, 400 kids some of their teams can't even make it to the court on time. They don't have enough players. So definitely, Mike, that's a great point. I think it's very relevant today.
It's sad. It's really sad because, you know, the kids, they love the game and they want to play the sport. And, you know, it's sad when you have, you know, a situation like that where a school has to close down because of political reasons like that. But, hey, you know, it's a part of the business. I mean, that's how, that's how it goes.
Back when Manny was playing, I remember seeing some of the high school basketball championships where Joe Crawford was on, I believe, Renaissance. Mm-hmm. And – Renaissance was great. Alex Legion was playing. He wasn't bad. And then even Deion Harris following Manny. But a lot of those guys, I remember some games where half the bench was empty. Some of these games where half the bench was empty.
Mm-hmm.
And these are powerhouse teams when it comes to high school basketball. So whether that was disciplinary or whether that was just pure attendance or cost, that's a whole other issue, is paying the play. You have to pay hundreds and hundreds of dollars.
And that's something we talked about in the summertime.
Play.
Yeah, exactly. With schools. That's
so
very true.
That might be part of it too for Michael. So.
Yeah, definitely. I could see that too. I believe we have another caller. Eric, how you doing? Eric, welcome to Current Sports.
I'm doing well, man. I'm calling from Detroit. And in regards to some of the high school closings, another big one that affected a lot of basketball players here, I believe it was 2005 when St. Martin de Porres closed. And that was also a school that had a lot of big-time athletes in both football and basketball. And I remember that really affected how some of those public school leagues went in the following years, because a lot of those players were spread all throughout the area.
Right. Definitely a great point, Eric. Thanks a lot for your call, Eric. But, yeah, I mean, that's what happens. I mean, when you have a school closed down, like, you know, like a Redford or, you know, a big-time school where they're known for a certain sport, even, you know, it doesn't have to be basketball. I mean, it could be football, different sports. I mean, what happens is, I know what happened in the Detroit area is that these players go to suburban schools that are close by, like a Dearborn, a Crestwood, an Edsel Ford, those type of schools around the Detroit area, and you have all this talent kind of spread out. And it kind of, in a way, kind of evens the playing field, because I know that, you know, Redford was known such a, you know, as a powerhouse. There were so many good players on that team. That school shuts down, the talent gets spread around, and you start to see, you know, a more competitive brand of basketball, not in the PSL, but in other leagues that have nothing to do with Detroit. So it's really interesting dynamic.
Yeah, and it's affecting other Detroit schools. Like when Redford closed down, I'm starting to see a lot more talent coming out of Martin Luther King now. I'm starting to see a lot more D1 prospects coming out of some other Detroit schools. So I think it's starting to spread around quite a bit, yeah.
Yeah, definitely. All right, well, let's hit the break, guys. When you come back, we will you'll get to hear my interview with Mark McElwee, the president of the Lansing Curling Club. Yes, I hit the ice with Mark, and, you know, the Olympics has just kicked off. Very timely, if you will. Don't go anywhere. Current Sports will be right back. Welcome back to Current Sports. I'm your host, Al Martin. You know, we just finished talking about, you know, Manny Corporeal here is a really prevalent guard in the Detroit area who went on to play in the D League and the NBA, and the Lakers signed him. They picked him up not too long ago. And Matt, you have some interesting news.
Yeah, the Lakers signed him to 2 10-day contracts and then informed him this week Tuesday that they would not be picking him up for the rest of the season. Of course, he went out with a swan song of 19 points and 8 rebounds. He shot 8 of 11 in 21 minutes.
Wow.
As if the Lakers are in a position to, you know, give up talent.
Right.
Oh, boy.
I have a feeling Manny will be back somewhere with some NBA jersey.
Somewhere, absolutely. He's running the D-League. So, yeah. I mean, he'll be fine. I think he's 24. I mean, he's a young guy. He's still got a bright future. And his middle name is LaDorable.
That's his middle name? I never know.
So
I thought his last name was...
He's always got that to fall back on.
That's hilarious.
So it's Corporeal LaDorable Harris.
It sure is.
Yeah. Wow. That's a heck of a name. All right. Well, it's the Olympic times, ladies and gents. And if you miss Current Sports TV, to get you in the Olympic mood, I got a chance to hit the ice with concerning a certain very interesting sport, the sport of curling, that is. I talk with the president of the Lansing Curling Club, Mark McElwee. If you missed that interview, here's a little snippet of how it went. Gotta ask you, Mark, because, you know, curling's not, you know, it's not like basketball where you're driving around in the summertime and you see guys playing it left and right, you know?
Right.
It's one of those sports that, you know, I really only see during the Olympic times.
That's true.
I gotta ask you, how did you start curling?
Well, I grew up in the Detroit area, and I would watch curling on the weekends on the Canadian TV.
Mm-hmm.
I have Canadian relatives, great aunts and great uncles. They all curled when they were younger. I never saw them curl, but I knew that they did. And then, lo and behold, comes 2002. I read that they had built a new club in Detroit.
Yeah.
And a brand new facility, dedicated curling ice. So I thought I'd give it a try.
So, just fell in love right there.
Yeah, I went down for a beginner's clinic on a Saturday and curled for 3 hours at the clinic. And then I stayed afterward for three more hours.
Three more hours.
I couldn't move the next day.
You were hooked.
Yeah, but I knew it. I knew it. Once I threw the first couple, I said, I have to do this. So,
it's
the kind of game where it'll grab you.
Yeah,
just
definitely.
Like that.
Definitely. I'll tell you what, my brief time out there, I mean, it's kind of like, it reminds me of the first time I played golf because I immediately gravitated towards golf once I played it. You know, it's different. You know, when you tell them that you curl, what are some of the reactions you get?
A lot of weightlifting questions. immediately, because you know, I mean, look at the physique here.
The physique is just shining through. Yeah. You're almost as big as me.
The gun show, maybe. And a lot of curling questions, weightlifting questions, hair questions, and beer questions.
Really?
Curl.
Ah.
You've heard of the 12-ounce curl.
I've heard of it.
but all kidding aside, most people... They don't know what it is. Curling, what's that? So then you have to, you know, you explain to them where it is. It's on ice. And do you use skates?
Mm-hmm.
That's another common question. Yeah.
Exactly. Yep. And it's not, as you guys just saw, it's not skates. Those are specially designed shoes.
That's correct.
At the bottom of yours, Teflon is what was present on your body. And you said one guy you curl with has stainless steel.
Yeah, that's even faster than Teflon.
Is it? I can just imagine.
Yeah, there's no friction.
Wow. You know, Mark, when you talk about the popularity of curling, again, people will definitely get a chance to see this sport on the national stage as the Olympic startup.
Yeah.
When you talk about the popularity of curling, what is the demographic of curlers? I mean, what is it, a wide age range?
It's a huge age range.
It is.
You can curl 9, 10 years old all the way up to mid-80s easily.
Wow.
There's adaptive devices for people in wheelchairs. For people who have bad knees, hips, shoulders, there's ways to continue curling your entire life. It's a lifetime sport.
What's the oldest curler you've taught?
The oldest curler I've played with in Detroit is turning 87 this year.
87?
87's got a new hip and a new shoulder.
Wow, 87
and
still curling. He's hooked, huh? How long has he been curling?
I don't know, forever. his name is Joe Livermore, and his name is on the arena.
Gotcha. Oh, so, gotta love that.
Yeah. So he's a dedicated curler.
Now, Mark, it is around the Olympic times again. They start tomorrow. Right. I can't wait. I love the Olympics, man, especially the Winter Olympics, because you see so many sports. I mean, does the interest of when it comes to curling, does it peak around this time?
Absolutely. We've been bombarded with requests for learn to curls, for requests to have groups come in to the summit, and you know, the problem is they schedule their ice time months in advance, so it's hard to find time, but we do our best to be able to, like the group you saw, you know, you just take a time and you come on out and curl. But interest, definitely, it's at its peak right now.
And other than just other times of the year, I mean, what's the interest like in other times of the year, the summertime, beginning of this
year? There's some interest in the summer, but it really starts to peak February, March, April. That's like the big push every 4 years for USA Curling and for curling clubs in general.
Gotta love that. And I'm sure your eyes will be glued to your television as well, watching the Olympics and maybe, you know, watching especially the curling events, especially.
Absolutely.
And, you know, when you talk about the Olympics, Mark, I mean, what makes this time so special for you?
Well, the thing about the Olympics is it's, you know, the best of the best coming together for just, you know, a full 2 weeks of really good competition at a very high level. The curling notwithstanding, I mean, the skiers you see are amazing. The figure skaters are, you know, incredible. How do you make yourself do that? How do you do it without completely falling over? And, you know, it's some of the, you know, the half pipe and things like that.
Right.
The snowboarders, they're just amazing.
Yes, they are. Yeah. I love watching it.
Now, it's just thrilling.
When you talk about your sport, when you talk about curling, I mean, how do you get to the Olympic level of curling? How does that process work?
You need to start when you're in your teens. I mean, and a lot of our Olympic teams, mostly the men are from Minnesota, and the women, most of them are from Wisconsin this time around.
Right.
But you know, you can build your way up through the junior ranks, through the USA Curling High Performance Program.
Mm-hmm.
The Olympic trials were held in this past November. Mm-hmm. So there were four women's teams invited to that and five men's teams. They were all pretty much handpicked from their results of curling throughout the year.
Is that one of your goals, to get to that level possibly?
I started way too late, unfortunately, to reach that level.
Yeah,
but I do like to curl competitively. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, you're a busy man, because when we did that shoot, actually, you had to shoot down to Detroit to do a competitive event, which you guys won, right?
Yeah, we had it. Well, we had just started our club championship round robin down in Detroit, and so Tuesday was the first night of that. So we did win our game. So we're 1-0 in our pool and hoping to get five more wins and make the playoffs.
Well, I wish you all the luck
in
that, Mark. You know, something, you know, that's so interesting that we talked about while we were on the ice, and which I love whenever I turn on the TV watching curling, you know, watching the Winter Olympics, is the yelling that goes on. And, you know, it's so interesting because, you know, you actually explained why the skip, the skip yells actually when the sweeping occurs. I mean, can you break that down?
The skip is yelling commands as to where they want the stone to end up and how they want it to get there. All right, so if the skip is yelling to the sweepers to sweep, in order to be heard, they're going to yell really loud.
Can it be pretty loud in the arenas that when fans cheer? I mean, how's the
fans? Fans don't cheer too much during the shots, but it's the other games going on at the same time. You got to be able to pick your skip's voice out of a crowd to know if you should be sweeping or not. So there's visual. I mean, you look up too. You know, you don't just rely on your ears. Sometimes you look up and they'll do this or you get a lot of and the more emphatic the need for sweeping, the louder and different words you'll use, like hurry, hurry, hard, harder, really hard.
I heard that a lot. Heard that a lot this week. Now, Mark, the reason for sweeping is to speed up or slow down the stone.
The reason for sweeping is to change the path.
To change the path. That's what it is. Okay.
You cannot add speed to a stone. Physics will not allow it.
See that? I jumped the gun there. I wasn't very good
at physics, but I know that.
There you go.
What you will do is the rock is going to travel on a parabola based on which way you release the stone. It'll curl one way or the other.
Right.
Based on the turn that you give it. So the skip will tell you to sweep if they want the rock to go straighter.
Mm-hmm.
And they will tell you not to sweep if they want it to curl more.
Ah, interesting.
Yep.
Very
so you can hold the line on a shot.
Yeah.
That's what they call it. If you want to just keep it straight, you're going to hold the line on that until it either makes contact with a stone that you're trying to hit or ends up in the right spot.
I'm going to use that tip. I'm becoming a curling expert as we speak, okay, Mark?
You
know,
you got
Mark,
it.
Before we let the 12th man get at you, you also broke down two pretty cool curling etiquettes, if you will. I mean, every sport has etiquette. And, you know, talk about those. Share those etiquette tips that you share with me.
Yep. All the curlers that you'll see do abide by what is really known as the spirit of curling.
Mm-hmm.
It's sportsmanship, not cheering an opponent's miss, not doing anything distracting or some of the rules say ungentlemanly.
Right, it's a gentleman's game.
It's a gentleman's game. It's a lot like golf. If you do an infraction of some sort, you call your own foul. There's not a referee who's going to step in and say, look, you did that. When now you're in trouble.
Even though on the Olympic level, no
even
officials
on the Olympic
anything?
Level, they have the for the hog line violation, which is where you have to release the stone by. That's an automated thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's implanted. The only thing the officials do is measure a stone, how close it is to the center, to see if that way you know neither of the teams is favoring it. So
that's
the only impartial thing. And you know before each game, you wish the other team good curling. After the game, win or lose, you shake their hand and say, good game, you know, which we had the opportunity to do in, a little early on Tuesday night.
Yeah,
so
we
that was kind of cool.
Good stuff.
Yeah, so that was great. Yep.
I love it because, yeah, before we start, I mean, everybody, even your own teammates, good curling to everybody. Yep. Gotta love that. Now, also, Mark, you have a pretty cool initiative here called Learn to Curl. Just tell the people about that really quick.
Yeah, we're trying to try to expose as many people as we can to the sport of curling right leading up to the Olympics. So what we've got on Sunday, February 23rd, starting from 2:30 till we're done, is a free Learn to Curl event over at the Summit. So what you'll get to do is come on over, we'll teach you the basics of the delivery, get you to throw a couple stones, and if time allows, you can stay out there and play. But you know, the thing we're going to try to do is move as many people through, and it's free, so we're expecting a big turnout.
For today's episode, we're going to go to our Facebook and Twitter pages for
awesome.
That. All right, Facebook.com/currentsports and my Twitter page at AlMartinWKAR. Mark, some interesting questions for you. We'll start with Adam Flum from Flint. Adam wants to know, if you could pick any player from any other pro sport to start a curling team, who would it be and why?
Wow. I would pick... Wow, that's a great question.
You don't want him to be tall, you told me.
No,
you want to be short.
You want to be short, strong, with a lot of endurance. Mm-hmm. I would take Justin Gatlin.
Justin Gatlin.
Because he's strong, he's got balance, and he'd have the endurance to sweep.
I thought you were going to say, like, Muggsy Bowles or somebody.
Hey, it's too short.
that's too short.
I can't be the tallest one on the team.
Gotcha. Well, thank you. Thanks a lot, Adam. All right, Jim from EL wants to know, have you ever suffered any injuries while curling?
You know, I haven't personally suffered a real injury. I do have a bicep tendon that acts up sometime when I'm sweeping, but... No, nothing that you'd call a significant injury.
Have you witnessed any significant injuries?
You can see some falls.
Really?
I mean, sometimes
okay.
people fall. That's why the first thing we teach at the Learn to Curl is safety, 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 safety.
Right.
How to fall. If you're falling backwards, tuck your chin.
Gotcha.
It can happen, and it's a little bit scary.
Yeah,
but,
it is, definitely.
But primarily, it's not a big injury risk for curling.
Right, I mean, it's a fun sport.
Yeah.
All right, thanks a lot, Jim. Appreciate it. All right, Sylvia from Hazlitt wants to know, what has been your biggest win as a curler?
One of my biggest wins actually just happened this year. We had a regional competition for the Great Lakes Curling Association, which Detroit and Lansing are both a member of.
Mm-hmm.
My team from Detroit won our fifth consecutive men's championship. Fifth consecutive, and we're going to Two Harbors, Minnesota in a couple of weeks for a week of where all I got to worry about is curling.
Oh, got to love it. That's heaven
fantastic.
For you, man.
All we got to do is worry about curling and watching the Olympics.
Oh, that's heaven. That's
pretty good.
You're going to enjoy that.
It's pretty good.
That's a good time. All right, thanks a lot, Sylvia. All right, let's go Johnny from Detroit. What is the strategy behind curling?
The strategy behind curling, there's two ways to play it, but most commonly, it's a game of putting up some guards to protect the scoring zone and then drawing in behind them.
Mm-hmm.
Other teams will try to keep it cleaner, where one stone gets in play, they're going to try to hit it.
Gotcha.
So there's the aggressive game and there's the conservative game. The conservative game is let's hit everything and keep it clean.
What is Mark's strategy?
We're very aggressive.
Very aggressive.
We're a draw team.
Hit
we're
everything.
Not a, we're not. We're a draw team. We're not a hitting team.
Oh, not a hitting
team.
Okay.
So it's very aggressive the way we play.
Ah, yes, the wonderful world of curling. I'm telling you guys, if you haven't tried curling, you got to go out there and give it a shot. You know, it's just a really relaxing sport. Like I said, you don't have to be the most physical, finesse, athletic type of guy to play it. Physics come into it so much, but it's just a great time. You know, you got to try it. Got to try it. It was a fun time. Thanks a lot, Mark, for inviting me out there at the Summit. Again, Mark Malcolm, he is the president of the Lansing Curling Club. They are at the Summit all the time practicing there, and they even have speed skating there now too. Figure skating, I mean, it's a great venue. All right, well, let's hit the break. When we come back, we're going to open our phone lines and talk about marijuana in the NFL. If you haven't heard, the NFL is considering allowing players to possibly use the drug marijuana to treat their pains. What do you think about that? 517-355-9527. Again, 517-355-9527. Don't go anywhere. We will be right back. Welcome back to Current Sports. All right, well, you know what? A hot button topic that has been talked about for these past few weeks concerns the NFL and their review process of possibly allowing marijuana use when it comes to its players in treating pain, the pain that they go through, possibly that, you know, smoking marijuana would have a positive effect in relieving pain for them. Now, it's been a hot button topic because, you know, marijuana is, of course, you know, with the consideration, I believe, two states, I believe, it is still illegal in those other states. And, you know, the research into it is really affecting people's perceptions when it comes to it. Now, guys, Matt and Alex, we're going to dive into this thing. Now, for me personally, when I heard about this story, I was pretty surprised, but I wasn't surprised. I mean, nowadays, I didn't even think we would come to a point where states would even consider legalizing it. But it's come to that point now with Colorado, of course, being one of those states. And, you know, so many players, you know, coming out of, you know, looking at First Take yesterday, they had a few players come on and talk about it. And, you know, ESPN has been having coverage of it, even Fox Sports One. Players have come out and talked about, you know, their teammates and who have used the drug to relieve pain after games. Especially a lot of those players talked about, you know, Tuesday being the big day because, you know, after you play an NFL game on Sunday, the adrenaline is still pumping on Monday, and Tuesday is when your body really settles down and those aches and pains really start to come to fruition. And a lot of their teammates turn to marijuana and smoke marijuana to relieve the pain, if you will. You know, it's really, really interesting. Guys, you know what? For me personally, when you talk about this subject, I think there needs to be some more research to really back it up. You know, some hard evidence here that, you know, marijuana does relieve pain. Now, I will bring up my grandfather. My grandfather, he actually passed away from prostate cancer in 2011. And, you know, the pain that he went through when he had cancer was so unbearable. I mean, he would wake up in aches and pains left and right, moaning throughout the night. I mean, it was really, really bad, to the point where he got approval to try medical marijuana to relieve some of that pain. And he did it, and it did relieve pain for him. It did relieve pain for him. It made him more relaxed, and, you know, his mannerisms did change. So there is, you know, those examples like that do back up this claim. And it's going to be really interesting if this does go through. If they do end up legalizing it, my personal opinion, hey, I don't see anything wrong with it, to be honest with you guys. Because, you know, if you look at the looking at the hard evidence research that they do have now, I always compare it when you talk about the legalization of marijuana. I compare it to alcohol in a way, because alcohol has been found in many studies to have more detrimental effects on the body when using it, more so than the drug marijuana. I mean, when you're drinking alcohol and you get that buzz, or, you know, when you get drunk, essentially, you can't operate a motor vehicle. There's evidence that suggests that when you smoke and get high with marijuana, you can at least operate a vehicle, sometimes better than when you're sober. I couldn't believe that when I was looking up this.
I don't know about that, because I do have some friends that have actually gotten in trouble for operating a motor vehicle while after smoking marijuana.
Oh, have they? Mm.
So I wouldn't necessarily say that's completely true.
Right, but I'm just saying there's research that backs up that claim.
Sure.
I'm just going off research here.
I don't think there would be as much reckless driving compared to marijuana, if you compare marijuana to drinking. Because when you're drinking, your vision's a lot worse. I mean, you swerve more.
Right.
I don't think you do that as much with smoking marijuana. But what I think the point is of it is, if when you compare marijuana and drinking, to an extent, is probably more harmful, probably more to more to the vital organs of your body.
Your motor skills are maybe more impaired. That's what I've been reading. You know, I was up so late last night, but that's beside the subject. But doing research on this, I mean, motor skills are more impaired when getting drunk than when you smoke marijuana.
Right.
Well, that's been studies at different universities.
So let's put it there practically. So let's look at some of the athletes. I mean, you have Burleson with the pizza thing. You have Bieber with his driving.
Wait. Now, you just said athletes. Let's look at athletes. And the second one you list is Justin Bieber. That's funny.
Well, first I'm comparing the
Burleson wasn't drunk or anything. He just
right. I'm comparing the
just hungry.
Just ridiculousness first, okay? You've got those kind of stuff. Yeah. And then you have the Tiger Woods thing. Then you have there are plenty of other cases. But overall, I don't think that even legalizing it to an extent for athletes, like you suggested earlier.
Well, allowing it, yeah.
I don't think that's...
Not testing for it.
Right, right. Well, I don't think that's... I mean, if they're allowing that to happen, then think about the connection, what that will do with steroids. Because it's the same kind of thing. Well, a lot of players are taking steroids.
Well, no, with steroids, you're enhancing your performance. Steroids affect the game.
Well,
marijuana is not affecting the game in any way.
Well, in a way, wouldn't you, if you wake up the next day and you're in aches and pains, and let's say it relieves those pains, and you smoke marijuana, and you don't...
But it's just relieving pain. It's not making you go out there if anything, I think, you know, and Aaron brought up a point, when you talk about marijuana, if anything, it relaxes you too much. You may just be too relaxed out there. When you go for a game, the adrenaline wants to be pumping, you want to be ready. Marijuana is not enhancing your performance on the field in any way.
But isn't a more relaxed
just relieving pain.
Mind, wouldn't that help your performance? I disagree.
When you relieve pain, I mean, it's the same thing, you know.
You play better. When I played basketball, when I had less pain, and I played better.
Yeah, but that's a different. I wouldn't compare steroids to marijuana, though. I mean, it's just.
Right, and you know, like, guys are getting shot up in the locker room with stuff to relieve pain before games. I mean, and that stuff already happens, and it's allowed.
Right,
you know,
right.
And they're not getting shot up with like steroids or anything, but like cortisone shots, you know, to relieve pain in your knees or something. Like Steve Smith, like that was the reason he was able to play in the playoffs this year for the Panthers. But the big thing for me when I look at this issue is Ryan Clark went on First Take and he talked about this. He said, looking at marijuana as an alternative to prescription drugs,
which are more addictive.
Exactly. So you're protecting players because they're using a less addictive substance to relieve pain. They're going to try and relieve pain any way they can. And I don't think any NFL player is probably going to have trouble getting a subscription for Vicodin or something. Mm-hmm. I don't see that happening. So I think if they're using something that is a less addictive substance to relieve that pain, I don't really see an issue with it. The legality thing, and I think the reason this got brought up is because, you know, Denver and Seattle are in the two states that have just recently legalized marijuana. So that's why it got brought up. And I think, you know, Roger Goodell kind of dismissed it, but I'm sure he wasn't, terribly upset that was the line of questioning that he was getting instead of getting hammered about concussions. I think anything that the NFL can kind of prop up to distract the public from the concussion issue,
they're going to run with it.
Exactly. Like, sure, give us 2 weeks of this in the news cycle. But I think, you know, players know when they're going to get tested. That's the other thing. They know when they're going to get tested.
So, yeah, that's how they avoid. I mean, right, like you said,
Antonio Cromartie said, we're going to do it anyway.
Yeah, they're going to do it. That's another thing I want to bring up. They're going to do it anyway.
Exactly.
You know?
If you're not going to be able to enforce it to a degree that you're going to be able to stop it.
Right. Allow it.
What's the point?
Why not? Just don't test for it. You know what I mean? They're going to do it anyway.
I'm wondering is with the unionization of Northwestern, can there be a similar unionization with athletes when it comes to the marijuana issue?
I don't know.
I mean, they have the Players Association.
Yeah, which
maybe that would be something
definitely
they would
brings
take
up. Yeah, that's probably what they'll take for that. But you know, when you look at it, I mean, again, you talk about going back to the, you know, when Ryan Clark went on First Take and he brought up the addictiveness when you talk about painkillers, and he brought up Brett Favre, who I didn't know. You know, he was popping pills left and right, and you know, to relieve the pain that he had after games, and you had other players who were doing the same thing, and they said they just got addicted to it, that, you know, they were in so much pain that they were popping pills, I mean, all the time to relieve the pain that they were going through. Marijuana, you know, it doesn't have that same addictiveness, I guess, if you look at the pills. So it's going to be really interesting. I never thought we'd be talking about this, but in the end, I think there would have to be more research, though. It has to be some hard research that really, really backs up this. But at the end of the day, we all know. Same thing. Now, if I want to compare any area, when you talk about marijuana to steroids, guys are going to do it anyway, anyhow. I don't care how much you try to regulate steroids. Guys are going to still use steroids. I don't care how much you try to regulate marijuana, if to a degree. Guys are still going to do this, no matter what you do at the end of the day. It's just going to be really interesting to see the NFL's take on this whole thing. So
if they do allow it and stop testing for it, I mean... Boy, Ricky Williams was just a decade early. Charles Rogers. I mean, you know, those guys from 10 years ago that are just cursing themselves because, you know, just a decade too soon.
Ricky, just many highs and lows in his career, many highs
and lows. Okay, what weekend picks we got, Matt?
Okay, we got a bunch because we only had a few on Monday here. Let's start out with college basketball. The Michigan schools. Let's see who can come out of the weekend maybe in first place. Maybe they'll still be tied. Let's start out Michigan at Iowa Saturday. Who you got?
I am going with Iowa in
taking
that game.
Iowa.
I'm gonna go with Iowa too.
I'm going with Iowa.
Do we want to do the score for that one?
Let's go to score. I'm going with Iowa by 7. Okay. Iowa by 7.
I'll go Iowa 6.
I'm going to go Iowa by 3. I think it's going to be a close game. We're all taking Iowa, though.
Yeah, we're all taking Iowa.
Sooner or later, they got to bounce back.
Exactly. Yeah. And Michigan's shooting can't stay this high all the time. You know? Come on now.
All right, next up, MSU goes to Wisconsin.
Yeah.
Play in the Kohl Center.
Yeah.
Wisconsin struggling at home. Always a tough place to play. Who you got?
I'm going with MSU by 5. I think Keith will return in that game.
I'll go MSU by 8.
Dang, I'm going to take MSU by 3.
By 3. You're going both with 3-point margins.
I think they're going to be tight games this weekend.
3 is my favorite number.
Those are good matchups.
They are.
I mean, not like the Big Ten has a lot of bad ones, but those are two particularly good matchups. Moving on. We have tonight the Nets visiting the Pistons at the Palace.
Pistons, they get out of this funk, I think. And you guys see Will Bynum getting into it with more cheeks. Oh, man, it's just really a bad time for a Pistons fan like me. But I'm going with the Pistons. They shake it off, they get the win over the
Nets. I'm going with the Nets, man. Brooklyn, typically, I think they played earlier on in the year.
Brooklyn has been playing pretty good this
season. They've been playing well.
2014. They've been playing pretty well.
Just about 500. They're just about 500.
Yeah.
So.
They have the eighth spot,
I think. Kidd hasn't dropped any drinks in a while.
No, he's not. He has not, you know, but they've been playing decent.
Turned a new – since Brooke Lopez went down, it seemed like it kind of opened things up for
Which
them.
Which is crazy. When I thought Brooke got hurt, I'm like, oh, they're in trouble now.
Right.
But, man,
right.
It's the exact opposite.
I'm going with the Nets.
Taking the Nets. I'm going to take the Nets as well.
Okay.
And then Saturday, the Nuggets come to town to play the Pistons.
Going with Pistons in that one. Nuggets are bad.
This is an intriguing matchup for me because many people thought the Pistons would sign Iguodala. And now he's on
you,
Denver.
Including you.
He's in Golden State now.
oh, that's right. He is Golden State.
Yeah, I was about to say, I'm rocking
that's
the Golden,
right,
G-
that's right.
Golden State.
But
today,
no, Steph Curry. Hot Steph Curry.
You were big on – I forgot about that.
Yeah,
you were big
on
Iguodala
big
coming
on Iguodala.
To Detroit.
I think that the Nuggets are going to beat the Pistons again.
Okay.
I kind of think so, too. Now, do you think that the Pistons would be better off with Iguodala than Josh Smith?
I think they would, personally.
Yeah.
I think so, too. Would, too.
Yeah. Josh Smith just shoots way too much, and it's just – that's the biggest thing with Josh. He just shoots way too much.
Yeah.
Get in the paint, man.
Iguodala is so consistent. He always brings it defensively. He's such a good player. All right, next up, Wings at the Lightning, last game before the Olympics.
I'm going with the Lightning in that
one. Taking the Lightning.
Yeah.
Ooh, I think the Wings, they're hot, man. I'm going to go with the Wings.
Yeah, I think.
Right, I chose the Wings. I think I had a.
You had them over the Canucks.
Yes. I'm a hockey expert, baby.
Yeah, I'm going to take the Wings as well. And then last but not least, MSU Women at Nebraska Sunday.
MSU Women. They're playing so good right now.
They're playing well. MSU.
I'm going to take them as well. All right, there you go.
And what's the standings look like right now, man?
Al, you are up 4. Alex has 3. I also have 3. So you're in the lead by 1.
I'm in the lead by
that,
1.
That Wings over the Canucks.
Yeah. That's
the difference right now.
It is. All right. Well, guys, Friday, we are out of time. A minute left. Thanks so much to all of you for tuning in to today's Current Sports. You've been listening to Current Sports with me, Al Martin, on WKAR East Lansing and WKAR FM HD3 East Lansing. As always, take care. Have one fantastic weekend. Be safe and be easy, people.